Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Film Week is coming up in just an hour. I'm back from seeing a few spring training baseball games in Arizona. Had a wonderful time, and we're going to talk about the Dodgers and Angels later this hour with the Triple Play. Nick Roman and A. Martinez will be joining me for that. And I first want to thank the terrific hosts who were here in my stead over the past 4 days, Stephen Cuevas, also John Raby and Lisa Napoli, the three of them hosting Air Talk while I was away vacationing. I appreciate their excellence and dedication very much. We're going to begin on politics, of course, with tomorrow's very significant South Carolina primary, where there's a huge number of Democratic African-American voters who are going to have their say about the Democratic field. Joe Biden looking to revive his candidacy among black voters tomorrow. Hard to overstate the importance to him. And meanwhile, Super Tuesday is looming. This coming Tuesday, the California primary, but also Texas and Colorado and many other states, huge percentage of the delegates at stake are going to be decided on Super Tuesday. And with us to talk about all that's going on here locally and nationally, KPCC politics reporter Libby Denkman. Libby, good morning.
Hey, Larry, welcome back. Hope you had a great week.
Thank you. I did. I know you've been working very hard while I was away having fun covering all that's going on. Give us a sense, first of all, of the campaign events that have been held in our listening area.
Yeah, we've had a lot of attention. Not surprising, the moving up of the California primary from June to March 3rd turned out to be very prescient. If the folks who'd made that decision wanted to make California more consequential in this delegate contest for the Democratic presidential race, we've had Bernie Sanders, most of all, just barnstorming through California. He was in Santa Ana last week, where I got a chance to speak with him. He went up to Bakersfield. He's going to be in San Jose this weekend. We haven't seen Elizabeth Warren as much in person, but her top surrogate, Julian Castro, has been all over L.A., doing a lot of outreach, especially to Latino communities. Dr. Jill Biden has been in town this week. Joe Biden is going to be appearing in California on Super Tuesday itself. Elizabeth Warren, who I just mentioned, will be in East L.A. Monday night right before Super Tuesday. I know folks are probably digging themselves out to listen to this segment from the Bloomberg mailings that are piling up in their
big
inbox.
Mailings, oversized.
Wow. Yeah,
I can't imagine the amount of money. I mean,
they're glossy too.
Yeah,
they're very full color glossies. You see the if you watch any television, if you're not a cord cutter like a lot of folks that are in my generation are, if you watch any cable TV, you're going to see him constantly. You're going to see him in internet ads. You know, he has spent so much money in California because his strategy really relies on skipping those early states and going hard on Super Tuesday. So we shall see, you know, what happens when the votes are in. And as you know, Larry, a lot of Californians have been voting since February 3rd when mailings went out, when the vote by mail ballots went out.
I wonder, though, how many are holding off and waiting until the final primary before Super Tuesday, South Carolina tomorrow, to see, because we know from polling that for many Democrats, the ability to match up head-to-head with President Trump and potentially win the general election is, for many voters, top of mind. So I wonder if seeing how these candidates play with an African-American electorate is causing some people to hold off.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually. Paul Mitchell with Political Data, Inc., it's a political tracking service that's bipartisan. They work for both Democrats and Republicans, is tracking numbers, and he makes these publicly available on their website, of who has returned ballots. And that's because, you know, candidates and campaigns want to know who has taken a vote-by-mail ballot and sent it back in already, so they don't keep trying to outreach to those people. So that's worth a lot of money to them to know who has been returning those ballots. And now, interestingly, Mitchell notes that The raw numbers of ballots that have been returned at this time compared to 2016 are up. So total number of ballots are higher than they were 4 years ago in the last presidential cycle. But because so many more counties have switched over to more of an emphasis on vote by mail in this new Voters' Choice Act, which we've talked about in the past, the rate of return, because there are way more ballots out there, is lower than 2016. And Mitchell has tracked, you know, the demographics of the folks who are not turning in their ballots. Many of them are these regular voters, the dependable ones. They even turned out, you know, in off years. They turn out in midterms.
Generally older voters.
Older and wider voters. They are holding on to their ballots at a rate that we haven't seen before. So this is an electorate that I think, you're right, Larry, is waiting to see what happens in South Carolina and really waiting to, you know, see if these candidates can play in a more diverse stage.
To me, this is so key for Joe Biden. If he doesn't have a convincing win in South Carolina, then the question is, those older voters who are holding off to see how he does, what then do they do? And if they're moderate voters, particularly, you know, Pete Buttigieg, does he do well with African-American voters? Does Amy Klobuchar, we understand her campaign's running low on funds, does she, you know, do better? Her last debate performance was not as strong as she had had early on in the debate cycle. So there's a lot for people to consider.
But I think, interestingly enough, too, Larry, we always, as journalists, you know, we want to think that people base their votes purely on whose policy positions line up with their ideology or what they care about the most. But we are not necessarily seeing Biden supporters automatically moving to a more moderate camp like Klobuchar or like Buttigieg. I mean, many folks list Elizabeth Warren as a second choice, for example. And, you know, you couldn't get two candidates that have, in this Democratic field, more of a difference practically, unless you were saying, you know, Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. And many Biden supporters list Bernie Sanders also as a second choice.
Sure, because they may be supporting Biden as a pragmatic vote, but really their heart is with a progressive candidate.
Sure, and they're thinking about, you know, head-to-head in November, what the matchup is going to look like with President Trump. I have not felt more, you know, watching an election, that voters are feeling like they're sort of armchair political analysts, than, you know, this more than ever this year. It feels as though the Democratic electorate truly is just thinking, you know, what are my neighbors going to do? What are, you know, what is my community going to do? Who is the most electable in November? Unusually so, you know, for this point in the primary.
Libby Denkman, KPCC politics reporter, with us on Air Talk today. And I'd like to hear from you. If you are a Democratic voter who's still trying to decide who you're going to vote for, what are you looking for? What's going to finally clinch it for you with one of the candidates? We're at 866-893-KPECC. That's 866-893-5722. Also, on the mechanics of voting, if you have questions about the vote centers, about the voting by mail process, Libby Denkman has been immersed in this for many weeks and can share with you how things are going and answer your questions about it. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. This may be a little in the weeds, Libby, I don't know, but Henry in the Crestview area wants to know about the assignment of delegates from California to the convention. This is very complex, so we need to be careful we don't get too deep into this.
But you don't want me to start doing math here and percentages here on the radio.
I was just reading about it. I was getting confused.
Yeah. So basically, the number that you need to remember is 15%. There are a number of delegates awarded from California on the statewide level, and there are a number awarded based on congressional districts and how campaigns perform in each congressional district. About 144 on the statewide level, 271 on the congressional district level. So candidates must reach that 15% threshold to win any delegates. Now, right now, the polling has sort of indicated that we have Bernie Sanders certainly safely in the zone of a 30%, maybe a quarter of support in California. So he seems to be safely in the zone of reaching that 15%. Now, the question is, what other candidates can reach a 15% and split delegates proportionally based on who is over 15%? Currently, different polls are showing different results on that. Berkeley IGS just came out this morning. It's one of the gold standard polls for California. And it's showing that the only candidate breaking that 15% threshold is Elizabeth Warren. She received 17% support in this poll, which was conducted in late February, so very recently.
And Bernie has about twice the percentage of support.
Bernie's
right?
at 34%. All the other campaigns, so Bloomberg, Buttigieg, are hovering around 11, 12%. Joe Biden taking a really big dive in this most recent poll, which isn't reflected in the previous PPIC and Monmouth that came out last week. Joe Biden down at 8%, Amy Klobuchar 6%. Now, what will happen is each congressional district is its own little contest. So you'll be allocated maybe between 4 and 7 delegates per congressional district. So Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Lee up in the Bay Area have the most. They have 7 delegates in their districts, and that's based on turnout in previous presidential elections and also population. Now, many of our congressional districts, Adam Schiff, Ted Lieu, folks down here have 5 or 6 delegates. Interesting to watch which ones are the odd number of delegates in each congressional district, because the candidates will split them proportionally, but you can't get half a delegate.
Yeah.
So it's rounded up. So in these odd number districts, that's a place where candidates can really pick up many more delegates than, you know, even their support would indicate. You might see these, congressional district by congressional district organizing, really focusing on those odd number districts.
All right. Again, we're at 866-893-KPECC. So if you've already voted, if you went to a vote center, be interested to hear your experience very briefly of that. If you have questions about voting by mail or the vote centers in LA and Orange County, we're at 866-893-KPCC. And if you're a Democratic voter who is still deciding with just a few days left before the California primary, what are you looking for? How key is South Carolina tomorrow? Are there other factors that you're weighing right up to the final couple of days or even election day itself? 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Now, as Libby just mentioned, Bernie Sanders is the front runner in all of the recent California polls that we've seen. Libby, you had a chance to talk with the Vermont senator earlier in the week, or Friday. It was a week ago. And one of the things you asked him about, and we'll hear his response, was about his Housing for All program, and briefly share with us what he's proposing.
Yeah, Sanders has a proposal to spend about $2 trillion over 10 years to really build or refurbish more supportive housing, more affordable housing, expand Section 8 vouchers, so deal with that backlog that folks wait for years on the Section 8 wait list. Also, cap rent hikes at 3% nationally for the time being, looking at kind of keeping people in their homes that are at risk of, getting evicted. The plan also includes a provision for overriding local zoning rules, and that's to help usher in a more dense set of affordable housing in certain areas, especially near transit. Folks may find that familiar because that is a similar conversation that we've had in the past over SB 50, the legislation that would have increased density near transit. And especially in LA, that local control issue is a very heated one. It has many neighborhoods saying if you override what our neighborhood plan is, you're going to usher in more gentrification. And so I asked Bernie Sanders about this.
All right. And so let's hear what Bernie had to say.
We are very conscious of the crisis of gentrification. Right? That is precisely one of the reasons why housing costs are going up. You have real estate developers who are not building affordable housing. They're making a whole lot of money by building housing for the rich. And when you do that, you drive rents up. So my goal as president is to work with state government, with local government, but we have got to address the housing crisis. It means building 10 million units of affordable and low-income housing. Instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires, we got to address the needs of working people in this country.
Such a low-key Bernie Sanders. This is so different than the man on stage
that
we're used to seeing.
Very low-key. You know, saving his voice, he was about to go on stage in front of several thousand people in Santa Ana and do, you know, his stump speech, big, you know, booming, normal delivery. But Sanders, you know, off stage and saving his voice, a little bit of a different Bernie.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear that. And of course, he lost his voice early on in the campaign, as candidates will. Elizabeth Warren's voice gave out on her a week ago before, not the last debate, but the one before that. And that happens to a lot of candidates.
And a lot of talk show hosts.
Yes,
those of
definitely.
Us who talk
you got it. You also asked Bernie Sanders why, at the same time, he puts himself in the continuum of Democratic presidents like FDR with the New Deal, LBJ's Great Society. Why does he then cling to the label of Democratic Socialist?
Well, what it suggests is that, unashamedly, we need an economy and a government that work for all, not just the few. And right now, we are living in a country where we have more income and wealth inequality than any time in the last 100 years, where you have a small number of billionaires, incredibly wealthy people, endless amounts of money, who exercise enormous power over the economic and political life of this country. And what we are trying to do is create an economy and a government that works for working people, who in the last 45 years, if you can believe it, despite the explosion of technology and worker productivity, are not making a nickel more in real inflation-accounted wages over a 45-year period. That is insane. Meanwhile, the people on top have seen their wealth increase by unbelievable amounts of money. So what democratic socialism basically means to me is that we're going to have an economy and a government that work for all, that we are prepared to take on Wall Street, the greed of the pharmaceutical industry, the insurance companies, the military-industrial complex. And by the way, if we want to save this planet for our children and future generations, we're going to have to take on the fossil fuel industry as well.
And Libby also had a chance. You asked him about, on a lighter, it's not a lighter topic, the scandal involving the Houston Astros and Major League Baseball.
It's quite serious, Larry.
It is. No, it is very serious. The Brooklyn Dodgers broke Bernie Sanders' heart when he was a teenager and they left New York for Los Angeles. And Libby asked Sanders about that scandal with the Astros.
As president of the United States, we will deal with side-stealing. That's my... Nah.
There's a lot of Los Angeles fans who want to hear that.
Well, now I'm on my way to victory, I guess. But look, I mean, when I was a kid growing up in Brooklyn, it was like a family. It really was like a family. And it never even occurred, believe me, to the kids my age, you know, 10, 11, 12 years of age, that the Brooklyn Dodgers could move. You can't... How do you move? It's like the Brooklyn Bridge. It cannot move. And it was a bit of disappointment to me. But years have come and gone. We forgive. All right. Good luck to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
It's a very, very politically adept answer.
Well,
to
and
that question.
As he was walking away, you know, his handlers gave us exactly 5 minutes to speak with Bernie. As he's walking away, I, of course, had to keep jawing, and I said, well, I know Texas is a Super Tuesday state, Senator, so maybe it's sensitive to make a comment about the Astros. And he's, you know, joking right back with me saying, you know, oh, you think my answer would be different in Texas? And, you know, just very, you know, loose. And I think getting him off some talking points, because I know a lot of these issues, candidates are on the trail. They're getting the same questions.
Press and play.
He did say that the Astros, the sign-stealing question, was the first time he had been asked that. So he was at least appreciative of something different.
That's good. And he sounded energized in that conversation. Linda in Pasadena says, I haven't sent in my ballot because I'm debating between Sanders and Warren. But seeing the polls predicting a Sanders victory by such a wide margin, it's kind of discouraging. It makes me feel that in the end, my vote and my decision won't matter. Carmel in Woodland Hills says, I've had my mail-in ballot for a while. I'm part of a family of four. We're all waiting. Pretty sure we're going to vote for Elizabeth Warren, but still somewhat undecided. All right, you can can share your comments by calling us at 866-893-KPECC. We also have some comments on the page that I'll share. Libby Dankman continues with us. We're talking politics ahead of Tuesday's California primary and Super Tuesday, when more than a third of the total delegates are awarded, with all the states taking part. Back in 1 minute. Coming up later this hour, the Triple Play. We talk baseball with A. Martinez and Nick Roman. Ralph writes on the Air Talk page, "This is the first time in my life I've ever been undecided in a presidential election or a primary. I'll wait until the last moment to decide just to see what happens. Electability is my primary concern, but 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton was a lock. And prior to that, a black man with a name like Barack Obama didn't stand a chance. Now, when it comes to electability, I'm adhering to the old Hollywood saying, nobody knows nothing." That's Ralph posting on the Air Talk page.
I wish more political analysts would take that tact, Ralph.
JP writes, "I hope a couple of moderates draw straws or flip coins and one or two drop out soon, but wonder how many donor-dependent candidates feel free to do that. I'm sure we got Trump that way. Candidates felt duty-bound to stay in the race until the very end." We had Linda in Pasadena, Libby, who I read her comment before the break, who said she's concerned with Sanders with the big lead in the polls, that if she votes for Warren, it wouldn't really matter. And you want to point out an important point about that.
Yeah, this is a proportional delegate allocation race, Linda. So when we look at Elizabeth Warren, especially in the most recent Berkeley IGS poll, breaking that 15% threshold, according to polling, the Elizabeth Warren campaign would say your vote matters very much, because this isn't a winner-take-all situation. Just because Sanders is ahead, that doesn't mean that your candidate can't come away in individual congressional districts and statewide with some delegates that they would think would be very important to kind of keep it going and you know, take their fight to the convention. So certainly not something that you should feel entirely discouraged about. Because Sanders does have a commanding lead in the polls, it doesn't mean other candidates can't take delegates away from this contest on Tuesday.
Jimmy in downtown LA says, "I voted by mail, but on my ballot, there weren't the district attorney or LA County judges, but they were in my voter guide. So I wonder how Jimmy would have missed the judges and the DA, or if there was an error on his LA County ballot."
We would have to look into that ballot individually. If you're in LA County and you don't see a DA candidate, that
they're
and
on
judges,
my mail-in ballot.
Certainly. Jimmy, if you can email us at elections@kpcc.org, we're taking your questions, part of the voter game plan. We have a team of producers and editors and reporters upstairs who take your questions. You know, we do have a redesigned ballot this time around in LA County, where you'll see the presidential candidates last, the local races first. And so potentially maybe Jimmy was looking at the wrong part of the ballot. But if you looked carefully and you don't see those, definitely that's time to elevate that, to talk to the registrar and send us that question.
Linda in Woodland Hills, you're on Air Talk.
Hi, I am holding on to my mail-in ballot. I'm a Democratic voter. I'm wanting to see what happens, and I'm wavering between Pete, Bernie, and Elizabeth. I feel guilty not voting for a woman, but it's electability is foremost in my mind.
So how important, if at all, is South Carolina's results tomorrow?
Very important, because I want my vote to count. I want to help get the person who's going to get the nomination in the hall. And I have a question about, can I turn in my mail-in ballot? Can I mail it in the day of, or do I have to go turn it in if I've waited that long?
Yeah, you can mail it in, but it has to be received within three days.
Yes, you can postmark it the day of the election, March 3rd, if you would like. It will, as long as it arrives within 3 days, it will be counted. It won't be counted in that first batch of mail-ins that folks who, you know, mail it right now and it arrives early, the registrars are able to kind of process that and get it all ready for tabulation. But certainly your vote will count as long as it arrives within those 3 days. You can also take it into any vote center and turn it in person if you'd rather do that. Just kind of hand it over in person.
Linda, thanks very much. Really appreciate it. Ari in Silver Lake says, this year seems different where it feels like we're in an election prior to the election. While I want to support Warren, now I feel I have to support to fend off the moderate wing, whereas in 2016, I felt like I had to vote for Hillary to fend off Trump. Shirley in East Hollywood says, I'm in my 80s. It's difficult for me to travel. Can I have a relative drop off my ballot for me? Yes, you can. But what is the protocol for that, Libby?
You can. And if you have a vote by mail ballot, there's a section on it where you can have somebody, you can sign it and say you're giving permission to have somebody else take your ballot in. This is a law that, has been okayed in California. Some folks call it ballot harvesting because if it's done at a larger scale, there are campaigns that really work on developing these relationships over time, especially in Orange County. A lot of folks talking about that for the 2020 race. But yes, you can designate somebody else to take your ballot in if you would like to. They can either drop it off or mail it in. You don't have to have somebody designated to do that.
All right, Linda, we thank you. And Shirley and Ari, thank you for your comments. Mandy in Redlands, you're on Air Talk with Libby Denkman, KPCC politics reporter.
Hi, good morning. As a Texas transplant a few years ago, we were solidly behind Beto O'Rourke for a while, watching what he had done in Texas and the groundswell of support that he had. But it seems like every candidate that we tend to go to seems to be dropping out and dropping like flies. And I find myself kind of moving towards Biden just as the go-to, only because I feel like he can end this madness. And I feel like so many other people are in our boat, and I'm still holding on to my ballot, and I just don't know what to do.
Yeah, Mandy, I think you speak for many people. It may not be the same candidate or, the same, but the process is similar, even, trying to and trying to weigh this issue of who you perceive has the best chance in the general election versus the candidate who is closest to winning your heart. Maybe there is no one who fully wins it, but you feel most closely aligned to because of her or his persona or ideology. And Libby, does polling reflect that kind of ambivalence people have?
It's been pretty fluid when it comes to the second tier of candidates. Obviously, Sanders, he's had this gigantic operation in California for longer, and it's more widespread and people power behind it in terms of volunteers than the rest of the candidates across California. But we have seen a lot of kind of fluidity between this tier of Bloomberg, Buttigieg, Biden in the last several polls from Berkeley IGS. The LA Times has a nice tracker showing from June to February kind of where those candidates have been going. Yeah. And it does feel like, Michael Bloomberg just taking off since he entered the race in the fall, clearly because of really a lot of spending. I think that, the Biden campaign would say that there is this several billion dollar roadblock in their way in order to consolidate that moderate vote, which is the Michael Bloomberg unlimited ability to spend, unlimited ability to buy TV ads and to really target voters. But that still hasn't reached, a threshold in California so far, based on polling, that he would actually go away with any delegates.
And he's not running in South Carolina, so there's no momentum for him to gain coming out of that election.
Right. But, theoretically, in that moderate lane, he is siphoning some support from the Buttigieg's and the Biden
and type. And Klobuchar. They're kind of all,
Yeah, potentially. It just, in California has seemed really fluid who the second choice is. Right now, it appears to be Elizabeth Warren. But, again, those numbers have not been solid the last several weeks. A lot of fluidity between who's in second place. Joe Biden in other polls was the second choice.
And again, looking at that Berkeley poll, you really see how progressive politics in California really are carrying the day, with the top two finishers being Sanders and Warren.
Well, Sanders' support has just been so sticky. It's with young people. It's with Latinos. He is winning about half of the Latino vote in California, which is very significant. His folks seem to have stuck with him in a more passionate way than the other candidates have. You know, you see that maybe the folks who are kind of sitting back and these callers that we're hearing from that are sitting back and kind of deciding, a lot of that is, well, you know, Sanders has the plurality. He certainly doesn't have the majority. Who will consolidate that other side? And yeah, it just hasn't happened so far because there's so fragmented of a field still going into Super Tuesday.
Kristen in Pasadena says, I live in Long Beach. I voted February 22nd, and the process was very easy. Kristen, thank you for sharing that. Sean in Torrance says, I voted early at my local voting center. If I didn't listen to KPCC, I wouldn't have known to scroll down to see the complete list of candidates. I think not having all the candidates on one screen, having to scroll, is really detrimental and unfair to candidates lower on the ballot screen. Sean, you're not alone in that analysis.
It's interesting. This week, Larry, we've suddenly seen local congressional candidates waking up to this issue. Ted Lieu has been tweeting about it. Jimmy Gomez has been tweeting about it, that his wife went to go vote, and kind of the difficulty of using that more button that you scroll down to see the further candidates after the top four on your LA County ballot marking machine. Now, the registrar made the button more obvious. They used this gradation pattern to show that you have more choices, and they made the more button pulsing. But as we've discussed, Beverly Hills filed a lawsuit over this issue, and this will be headed to court potentially in a few months. I think the first hearing's in May, so it's not going to affect what happens on Tuesday or the early vote that's going on right now, but it certainly is something people are concerned about.
Well, and I wonder if the registrar is going to look to change it even before a lawsuit settles it.
You know, Dean Logan points out that it complies with very stringent state certification requirements from the Secretary of State. For accessibility reasons, you can't technically have a true scrolling option on your screen. You have to have separate screens for the next choices. I mean, this stuff gets very arcane.
Yeah, yeah.
But, Dean says that this, the font size and the more button moving things onto a second page are prescribed by state law. Now, the difference in LA this year is that everyone will be using these new ballot marking devices. It's a universal system, unless you ask for a very difficult to use backup paper ballot that has been required by the Secretary of State. That backup paper, though, is blank. You have to write in your entire choice. It's not an easy option for most people. So most everyone going into the vote center, and you can do that right now today until 5 o'clock, through the weekend, go early vote if you can. Most everyone will be using that ballot marking device.
Are all the vote centers open now?
All of them will be open Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, tomorrow morning.
The first few hundred are open right now and have been since last Saturday. I was out at some of them. There were, a few hiccups in the morning where they couldn't get the ballot marking machines booted up because they didn't have the right barcodes. But most people by the afternoon, they were doing some troubleshooting at different stations. Most people had those machines working. I've heard from folks saying it's really nice. You can stop by any vote center. You don't have to go to your prescribed polling place.
And best place to get the information, of course, is las.org. Also, you can get the information on the LA County or Orange County registrar sites, because there were some changes with some of the vote centers rather early on. You might have an outdated list, so you can go to their website and get the most updated.
Yeah, that's really important. And just remember, if you always go to vote in person on Election Day, your neighborhood polling place is likely not a vote center this year. Only about one in four or one in five will be transitioning over to be a vote center, just purely, based on the numbers that we see, 4,800 neighborhood polling places down to under 1,000 vote centers. So, definitely go online, look at where you vote now, because it probably has changed. And you can do that, early. Hopefully that will alleviate any lines or any issues that you might have on Election Day.
Libby, thank you so much. Next week, we're going to see a lot of each other because Libby and I will be anchoring Election Night, the California Returns, Tuesday evening starting at 8 o'clock here on KPCC. And NPR's live coverage of Super Tuesday starts at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's on Tuesday. And then Libby is with me 1 week from today. We've got a special program in our Crawford Family Forum. The first hour of Air Talk will be live right here at KPCC. KCC will have a panel of political analysts who'll be talking about Super Tuesday, the California primary, and looking forward to Big Tuesday, which comes up the following week, and of course, the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee coming up in the middle of the summer. You're listening to AirTalk on KPCC. It's the Triple Play coming up in 90 seconds.